whatever. We're going to turn this into what I want it to be, no matter how inappropriate it is. That's sloppy. And if you want to know why black businesses fail so often, what does everybody have the same complaint about with black businesses? The floors are dirty. At the restaurant, the tables are sticky. The service is shoddy. Everybody is trying to figure out how they can make a buck as quick as they can, and they're doing it as sloppily as they can. And then can't figure out why they don't have any long-term success. Let me just elbow my way in, and I'll figure out the rest when I get there. No plan, no nothing. That was why I said last night, I don't want anybody else posting up any more crowdfunding, anything like that, because folk are just sitting up here doing it. They're not consulting anybody. They just see the group as a cash cow. I'll just walk in, hold my hand out, and somebody will drop money in it. And that's not how enterprises or economies are built. You're supposed to know people. How many of you know 3 computer programmers in our group? How many of you know the 5 website designers in my group? 4 if you don't count me. How many of you know them? Because all of you want to talk about doing apps. Everybody here wants a website. How many of you know how to construct one? You got a group of people here, but how many of them who make websites do you actually even know by name? Or did you even look into that? How many people here work in telecommunications? There's 2 of them. 3 if you count me, at least telecommunications experience. How many of you have dug into that right here in this group? We got 2 or 3 people who do real estate. How many of you know the real estate agents in our group? How many of you? We have 4 videographers, 5 if you count me. How many of you know the videographers of the Black Channel? How many of you know them? I'm not talking about in your personal life. I'm talking about in the group that we've put together here. How many of you know them? How many? See, that is what I mean by bringing together people of resources. And have you sat and talked with them and chopped game up with them? Have you actually done that? Or have you come through the door trying to figure out, well, my website that hasn't been doing nothing and hasn't gone anywhere, let me see if this place will serve as a springboard. And all you're really going to do is turn off people here like you did for everybody else with your website. One of the people today was trying to sell their own book. Didn't say anything about my post, except, oh yeah, that's exactly what I go into in my book. I mean, that's classic spamming. Then can't figure out why your self-published book hasn't sold anything. If it did, you'd be like Tariq. You see, Tariq's books sell. That's why Tariq doesn't have to post up all over Facebook and on people's posts about his books. His books sell. Sell. And it's not selling because you are not doing the necessary groundwork of networking with other people to make sure that, not that you have their permission. See, here's where we mess up at, Professor Truth. Black folk don't even try to get permission. But if you ask them what the problem was, everybody who I had to admonished today about this, saying that, oh, I need to get permission. No, it's not about getting my permission. It's about getting our help. I don't want you to just have access. Why don't you get together with folk so that they can actually help you and make sure that you are doing this the right way? You see, the problem with the jigaboom from last week, a grown man squealing and screeching like a woman, like a 10-year-old girl, is that he's not actually building enterprise. You cannot build an enterprise by walking into people's offices and trying to bully them into accepting your product. You see, when I was learning salesmanship, I learned an extremely good one. And that was one thing that he made sure I understood to never do. Never lie your way into somebody's office. And never barge your way in and drop your product on their desk. Never do that. That is a guaranteed way. The first thing they're going to ask you is, who are you? They want to know your name. You think you've done brilliant. My name is Tommy Lee. Okay, Mr. Lee. And who sent you? Oh, well, I work for the firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe. Okay. Mr. Lee, what I want you to do is wait right here for just a moment. Let me get my secretary. Goes and gets the secretary. Do we have an account with Dewey, Cheatham & Howe? Yes, we do. Okay. Mr. Lee, please take your box and get off my premises immediately. And Ms. Tessmacher, contact Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and tell them that we're canceling their account. Now, what do you think is going to happen when Mr. Lee gets back to the offices of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe? What do you think is going to happen when he gets back there? He's going to join the ranks of the 7% employed. That's a mistake that you will only make once. And that's why they have to train you early and teach you early that you do not do this. And I've had folk, when you come on this broadcast and try to blurt out websites, you are here under false pretenses. When you come on my post and put up links to your website or your book, you are here under false pretenses. And the only thing that's going to happen is I'm going to delete you, and then I'm going to block you to make sure you never come back. Instead of you sitting and making a relationship that can lead to something where you've actually got a support structure, and now you've built synergy, because instead of you doing this by yourself, not only have you made an acquaintance, you've made a relationship. This is something that you can say, hey, I'm trying to get XYZ done. Can you help me out with this? But you see, you've got it in your mind that you're going to do this your way, and that all I need to do is get a group of black folk together, and I will throw this in front of them, and they will all become instantaneous converts. And that's what we see when you're walking in the Walmart in Philadelphia. The street vendors in front of the hair salons. And that's why 15 and 20 years later, those Negroes are still street vendors in front of hair salons. At no point did they ever stop trying to push things on people and actually start forging relationships, because that is how business is done. And many of you are young, and I understand that you don't come from households of family members who taught you this. I'm telling you this. Now, if you want to get snippy and get off in your feelings and be upset, because a lot of you are bastard babies raised by big, fat, welfare, food stamp, super sluts from the projects. I'm just telling you what your mama is. And when you were little children, you acted up in class, and instead of her spanking your badass because she was not interested in raising you, because you were conceived in order for her to keep some no-good nigga who was never going to do anything for her, and when that failed, she dropped you on your head or figured somebody else can raise you. And when you got in trouble at school, she went to the school raising hell, but she never tried to figure out what you had done to see if maybe some discipline was in order. And now a lot of you are grown people still acting like the bastard babies of the welfare whores. Undisciplined, unruly, ill-mannered. And now you've brought all of that idiocy into your adulthood. And you meet people like us, and you're shocked that we don't want to do business with people who act like immature brats. You're shocked. and not just shocked, you're offended. See the clown last week? He behaved like the four-year-old in kindergarten. That's the mess that he was doing ever since his mama let, after the men got off the top of her, sent him off to school. And he acted like that in class with people. And instead of his mama spanking him, she instead let it go because he acts like her. Now he's a grown man who lacks the ability to forge relationships with other men who can help him get things done. Totally devoid of that. And he does not have the luxury of behaving like that for any real length of time. But now he's a grown man, and he can never set foot at the Black Channel again. What does that tell you? You see, it's one thing if you've got more power, wealth, and influence than the person that you're talking back to, but when you're on a lower level, you're supposed to be quiet and mind your manners. Black people here understand you have a unique opportunity, but we're not here for the purposes of feeding your little egos. You are supposed to be here because you are interested in power, wealth, and influence. And you have to get these lessons now. The Intelligent Black Society Group is not a bulletin board for whatever sparks your interest at the time. It is about discussions of power, wealth, and influence, hallmarked by actionable information, information we can actually execute in order to become entrepreneurs. That's the purpose of the Intelligent Black Society Group. And if what you are posting is not directly giving that information or asking for that information, it's out of context. It's in violation. And I'm not going to let it devolve into an undisciplined place. Now, if that offends you, maybe business ownership is not for you, because you lack the knowledge and the temperament to understand when you're doing something wrong, and you're just going to take that into business with you, and that's why all of the people, every single one of the people who had a problem with it, they're not business owners. They didn't actually make that connection. By the way, TBA's got business and you don't. Have you made the connection yet? Most of them did not. Going to go ahead and take one phone call here. Caller from 832, you're on live with the Black Channel.
GBA.
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is Omeki and Descendant from Texas.
Black First Brother, what's on your mind?
Just listening to the topic today. And, yeah, definitely black men and women definitely need to learn business etiquette, because I believe that's what this all falls into. And
how many street vendors do you have there in Houston?
They're all over the place here. You got a lot of Hispanic ones.
Yep.
You got some black ones. It depends on the side of town you go to.
Yeah. Now, how many of the black ones ever graduate to a brick and mortar store?
I'd say less than 10%.
How long have you lived in Houston?
20 years.
So that means you've been there long enough to see them come and go.
Oh, yeah.
And what you're saying is you can't think about 1% of them, maybe, who ever graduated from being a street vendor and hawking CDs outside of the Target to actually have their own store. Now,
exactly.
Why do you think, now the Hispanics and Asians do it all the time. The Hispanics come here for the purposes of doing that all over California. Why is it that the black ones don't make the same progress?
Because they don't have the correct mindset. They don't use the correct demeanor. You know, they have an attitude that is pretty crappy when they deal with their customers and clientele. And they don't, I don't know if they don't understand it, or maybe they just don't give a damn, but they don't know you can't build a customer base if your customers don't come to a friendly, receptive, clean business, transaction every time. They want that same feeling every time. But if you only give them substandard and subpar service, well, they're out the door, and they're going to find a place that's not giving them that, that's giving them quality service for the money that they're spending.
Why do they have such an aversion to doing business the right way?
That's a hell of a question. I don't know the answer to that question, TBA. I mean, some people might say, well, white supremacy, but I don't think that has anything to do with it, because that's something that you have to have within yourself. Do I want to provide a quality service to people at the price rate that I've set? Because I want to build that clientele. I mean, that's from the boardroom to the street corner. You have to build a reputation of doing business in a correct manner and the same way every time. So I don't know why they don't do it. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just our degenerated culture. I think that's a factor. Our lack of thirst and hunger for intelligence and learning what we don't know and what we don't have, and seeing who does it right. How did Walgreens get Walgreens, and how did the Asian shop turn to the Asian shop and become a chain? We don't look and see how they did it and try to replicate that.
We have a lot of employee mindset, and we bring that employee mindset to us when there's a forum about building of enterprise. All these other people are trying to figure out how to think like an employer, to think like a business owner. We start out with a consumer mindset, and we think like consumers. And not only that, but we try to give our consumers the lowest common denominator. We're not even trying to provide the best for our people. Even for what we're trying to hustle, we're trying to give them the lowest common denominator. No wonder we end up having to hustle in the worst parts of town. And 20 years later, that dude is still on the street corner. Still there.
I think,
still there. You're offended.
Yeah, that's definitely why, you know, the program and the knowledge that you and Professor True provide is so dearly needed, because a lot of black folks out here don't understand that you have to provide a quality service and quality customer care. Like you said, they bring that employee mind state, and they don't bring that pride and professionalism that they need to bring to the table.
I'll give you an example here. People invite me to their groups all the time on Facebook. I get an invitation every hour. These are people who have never posted a comment on any of my posts, never responded to anything, didn't contribute to 7 a.m., don't call into the broadcast, they don't engage, they're just on my friends list. And then out of nowhere, like a drunk driver, they smash me with an invitation to join some group that they set up. That's what they do. They absolutely ambush us with some demand that they're going to bully us into their group. And what I'm saying is, you haven't forged a relationship with me. That is why the Intelligent Black Society group, I made a point, don't invite anybody to it. This group is not for drafting people. I only want people who ask to join. That's it. I could have had a lot more people if I just drafted folk, but I don't do that. Why? Because I don't like it when people do it to me. I want people to be a part of what we're doing because they want to be there. I try to build relationships with people. If you like what we're doing here and you contributed to 7 a.m., join us. But that's not the way these other people do things. Brother, they're not even building a social network on Facebook properly. They're not even doing that. And then they wonder why I'm short on patience.
Well, it's just like you laid out. If you want to be involved with something, you have to put your money where your mouth is. You have to show a certain level of dedication. You have to build a relationship with the people that you feel you might be interested in going into business with or dealing with on a certain level. And black folks a lot of times just like to jump out there and hit you with the bean pie. Hey, get this or get that. No introduction, no history, no relationship build. Just give me some money because I'm telling you I have it. And when you come to the black, you can't do that. This was a cause and something that I know I believed in and had been waiting for. So I donated, I contributed, you know. I did my research. I listened to Professor Black Truth, all his broadcasts. I listened to all your broadcasts. I made sure I knew what was going on, what the subject matter was, what the mission statement is, and then I made a decision. This is what I agree with, and this is what I'm willing to do, whatever it needs to be done. But I got to show I have a certain amount of intelligence, I have a certain amount of respect for this guy, and you demonstrate that, and you build that over time. But black folks aren't used to doing business like that, and that's a major problem.
Well, in the 21st century, at the point where we're at right now, there really is no room for error, and a lot of people are going to be left behind, even right here, because here's the thing. I don't have the ability or the luxury, brother, to go round and round with them for months and years. I don't have that. I don't have time for that anymore.
Oh, yeah.
The situation is too urgent.
I mean, you've detailed what they're doing in Detroit, what they're going to do in Atlanta, because I was out there, and what they're doing in Houston, because I attended Dr. Umar's lecture this weekend. And what they're doing in Detroit, like you said, is just the appetizer to see how it goes. But they're gentrifying down here in all the wards. I know you may be familiar with how they have it set up for the poor black folk here. They put you in what they call wards, first ward, second ward, third ward, fourth ward. You know, Freedmanstown, I think you've heard of that. Freedmanstown was an all-black town that was granted to the ex-slaves after Juneteenth, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. They're moving all those black families out, and white folks are buying the whole fourth ward. There's only a corner left. They have acres of land, but they've already been dispersed. And guess what happened to the property taxes? Because I have an aunt that still lives there. Because I have family members that was from Freedmanstown and from that area and have lived there for generations. But her, you know what her taxes did? Exactly as you said. They doubled. Her property taxes doubled, and they may triple in the next 2 years.
Now, as you'll all remember, in Houston, Scarface, Bushwick Bill, and whatnot, Willie D, they were infamous as the Ghetto Boys, Fifth Ward. So if Fourth, as you say, if Fourth Ward has already fallen to gentrification, how far behind is the Fifth Ward now?
They're working on it as we speak.
So the Ghetto Boys, hell, they won't even be able to call Fifth Ward the Ghetto anymore very soon. Sounds like Compton. It's amazing if you all have watched that Frontline video that I posted, Generation Like, and the young man, I think his name is Stephen Fernandez, something like that. Little young kid, he's a big YouTube star. Little Hispanic kid from Compton. How many YouTube stars do you know from Compton who are actually making some money at it and got millions of views? How many you know? We did NWA. Cosmos wanted DJ Quick, and then we sat down. That's it. So if you wondered what the Hispanics are doing, hell, we can show you right there. He's not trying to be broke. He's trying to get power, wealth, and influence for his family. And what does that mean? His property values are going to go up. He's a little kid and can already afford a house better than anybody else in Compton can. So what does that mean? That means that his property values at 10 or 12 years old are already going to be three times yours. When your children have that much of a head start on your kids, he's prepared for triple the property values at 12. What are your kids prepared for in Compton when he's ready for triple the property values at 12?
And again, as you know, as you stated, and as you keep hammering and hammering and hammering, they're dropping economic bombs. And they're doing that here. They're doing that in San Antonio. And they're doing that up north. They're doing that out west. They don't have to put a gun to your head. All they got to do is make it to where you can't pay and you got to get out. Because the residents in that area in Fort Ward have all but fled from that area. And you know what they do? If you go through there and you're black now, even though that was Freedmanstown, the police are arresting black males at a rate that is alarming. Every time I go through there, I visit my family, I get stopped. And I have to show my credentials, show my papers. Because if they can't get you out of the taxes, they're harassing you out. And they're going to say, well, this is a high crime area. Or this is this. They use whatever excuse they can get in. Because they're making sure they're getting you out so they can get the property dirt cheap. And then as the property taxes rises and they build these $500,000 homes that they're building over there, these lofts, and then they turn a major profit. But they got you just kicked out, and you got in arrears, so they got your property for little of nothing, and they're turning around and selling the same property for $200,000, $300,000 easy because it's right in the downtown area. It's like 5 minutes from the downtown strip.
Is Houston one of the cities that places liens for delinquent water bills?
I believe so. I'm not 100% sure on that. But I believe so.
Because Texas does not have state income tax, so that really kind of makes that kind of situation happen a lot. So I don't know if Houston is one of the places that does that either, but I would not be surprised. And they're going to start swinging this stuff like a hammer. You just verify for everybody. The economic bombs are dropping in Houston. And guess what? Beyonce and her family are ready for it.
Yeah.
You went from being represented by the Ghetto Boys to being represented by Beyonce, a woman who could give a damn about blackness. She does black folk for nothing except making money. Kind of sounds familiar to a few groups of people, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'll let you have the last word.
Just want to say black first. Oh, yeah, I caught, at the program I went to with Dr. Umar, I saw a black first shirt on one of the guys.
Yeah, I think that was
nice,
Bartholomew.
Very sharp.
I want to say that was Bartholomew. That's what I want to say.
Yeah, it was Bartholomew. I got to meet the guy.
Yeah, that Negro is everywhere, let me tell you. He is everywhere. I'm going
to
make him captain of the damn street team, let me tell you. If it isn't, if you saw a black first shirt anywhere in America, if it wasn't a female, it was Bartholomew.
Yeah.
I put out a bunch of shirts. Probably him. The first black shirt you see on TV is probably going
to
be him jumping up and down at the Texans game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he represented. But black first, and I'm going to stay abreast of when the documentary actually hits. And we're just going to have to keep pushing. And those who are ready to commit and contribute the time, effort, and money, Those are the black folks we need. And anyone else, well, you know, they got to be shown the door. You need to find the fraud, the fakers, you know, the bastard baby makers, whatever other program you feel might fit you. But this is for committed black folks that want a future for the young black men and women coming up. Period.
Well, now, are you part of the Intelligent Black Society group?
That's what I got to get a part of, because I actually have a – because I've reflected on what you said. Like I said, I have low money put away, yada, yada. But I've actually come up with a product that I want to put forward and I want to bring to the table, you know, to the market. But I got to check into a copyright and this and this and this, and that's what I need to join that organization for, to talk with some guys who might be a little bit more well-versed in that on the legal aspect of it, because it has to do with a little bit of artwork and getting that, and make sure that's protected from mine and a little bit of intellectual property. But it's a little product that I think may be good. And it kind of – and it encompasses some of the things I told you that I wanted to do. It helps benefit black people, it uplifts them, and it teaches them, and it's a fun activity that they can do. It's kind of family-oriented, but it's geared toward, you know, the African race.
Okay, well, definitely get with us and let us know, you know, basically you can join the group, just give us the email address you contributed with, and we'll be glad to add you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much for checking in with us here. Please do so again. Grab this line right here. I think I know who this is. Welcome back to the Black Channel, Mona.
Black first.
What's on your mind, sister?
I just want to talk about what you pass on. And when you were saying why they don't go from vendor to business owner into a building, when I thought to open business, it wasn't just about me. It wasn't, look what I'm doing. It was, look what you can do. So that's the vehicle that I provided for entrepreneurs to be their own business people. However, if we only think of business in an individual way of how quick can I get the dollar, in opposed to how long can I keep the dollar? We're not going to be successful. You are supposed to go into business for longevity. You are supposed to stay on the buyer's mind. When they think of a certain product, bam, I want to go to Michael's shop. I want to go eat at Jennifer's restaurant. We don't have that concept of excellent customer service, of greeting the client, of being consistent in our product as far as restaurant. The food tastes the same. The product is the same. The quality is the same. The time I get in and out of there is the same. Passing on something is not only to your family, but it's to other people that surround you, that shows them that I can do this too, because I see this prototype that is successful. But when you walk into something that is not successful, that deters you also from trying to do that, unless you don't have the concept of being the best at whatever business it is that you're trying to put out here. So when you say inside the group that we are supposed to build relationships, if you don't know how to build a normal relationship between black people, then you can't get the concept of building a business relationship with people.
Now, where do you see as the failure of that happening?
They don't have the basics, that they do not understand what you're talking about, that it has to be broken down in an elementary way, because this is something new to everybody. That's what I see. It's something new, and they don't know. So they are fumbling around. They think they're doing the right thing, but they're not, and they don't know. what's desired. Like you say, the Asian community or the Jewish community, they sit down and they say, "What this is what we're going to do, and this is, you know, our concept, and this is how we're going to conduct business." They've never had that sit down. So although the rules and regulations are in place, they still don't understand what that means. No soliciting, no this. No, they don't know what that means. Asking, you know, for clarity, they just throw things out there and hope that it passes. And then when it doesn't pass, they don't know why. And instead of asking why, they get frustrated or feel, you know, attacked. So although we are in Intelligent Black Society as a group, we don't understand why we're here. Because they're showing that, look at me. They don't know what you're saying when they say build a relationship. Does that mean link up? Does that mean say what I'm doing? They don't know what it means. They want to be in there. They want the knowledge, but they don't know what's acceptable, how they're supposed to be conducting themselves.
They wouldn't want anybody treating them like that on the streets. This comes back to just the basic question of, you know, manners and etiquette. I mean, who is responsible for teaching etiquette to these people?
Well, if they're not used to the etiquette that's required at a higher standard, they don't know what to do. They're only showing what they know what to do or what they've been doing. So we might have to go to the basics. This is a new concept for many people. Although they're trying to get it, it's still a new concept. If you've never had a successful business, what do you bring to the table? They're showing what they bring to the table. And that's why it's not successful.
There's a place out there where the brothers who are doing their street vending and hustling CDs and everything else are very common. How many of them have actually graduated to something bigger and better? How many of them? Because you've been out there for a while. How many of them have you ever seen graduate to a brick-and-mortar building?
I know of one person, they've been out their car for 20 years. They don't have the concept of getting a building. They just prefer to go from shopping center to shopping center, to beauty shop to beauty shop, to black-owned business to black-owned business, because that building is a responsibility. The lights have to stay on. The business has to be consistent. When you're in your car, you don't have to show up all the time. When that business says, I'm open from 9 to 5, Tuesday through Saturday, somebody's got to be in there. Somebody's going to have to provide that service. Somebody has to have that product. Now, when you're in your car or on the corner, like I said, you sold out today. You don't have it today. Oh, you missed me. Oh, I had that last week. Oh, if you would have called me yesterday. But that actual building, it has to produce on a consistent basis. Hey, Kurt might be on the corner today. No, Kurt is open today. Kurt is open every day. Oh, Kurt ain't on this corner. Kurt is over here on this corner because he got ran off of this corner. They'll have that concept.
When you have a building, got maintenance, you have upkeep, you have to actually be there at a certain time to open up. You know, there's a lot more to it than just having a building, and you're right. Maybe that's intimidating to a lot of people, that they want the option of operating as a bottom feeder. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
That so many of us have come to the conclusion that wealth is not really what we want. because our standards are so low, if we can just get by, if we can get by, then that's what I'll look for, if I can just get by. And I'm trying to divorce us from the get by mindset. What he needs to do is get with other suppliers, get with other people, deal with this in a mature fashion. But hell, we got them on Facebook and they don't do that here with me. And I'm a receptive audience, by the way. I didn't sit up here and try to decapitate Ariel last night. I'm here to help. And after the broadcast, I talked to her some more and I said, let's see about getting your game together for you. And now I feel a lot better about it. And there are actually two other people who want to help her and will actually be able to help make things cheaper for her. See, that's what happens when somebody gets with you at this point right now. We can make it a lot cheaper and easier for her. That's what happens when you build relationships with people as opposed to, well, let me slam through the door and throw this in your lap and you better buy it because, after all, it's here now.
I really believe that some of your message was lost in this way, that I want to prove something to TBA. I got this great thing, and I did it, and bam, let's roll with it. And that's a good thing. So some of the message was lost, and I don't really know how to explain it, where they want to show that they can produce something, but they haven't done all the work. I want to say, okay, TBA did this documentary, and bam, here's my thing. And they don't understand that that's not how it works. And they don't see any wrong in that. But
you know
what?
Maybe the problem is me. Now that you mentioned all that, Mona, maybe the problem was me. Maybe I didn't facilitate things in a way that was constructive enough for what they were going through. Because enthusiasm is good. Enthusiasm is good, but being aimless makes your enthusiasm worthless. So maybe what we need is a committee of people. People who've got a business or had a business or have access to those things. And we can be like go-to people so that everybody's not just sitting here fumbling around. And before they sit up here and bring whatever they're trying to do to the group, maybe have them run it by us first.
Exactly, because when I was listening to Professor Truth, and he said, it took you 5 years to do this. So if it took you 5 years to do this, there were some steps that got you to right here today. And like he said, they're trying to eliminate the steps. And, hey, if he could do it, I could do it too. But where's going to be the longevity? So, yeah, I think you have to do that because they're not understanding. And they're out to make you proud of something, and we want successful people with longevity for not just a year or two, not just to get past the 7 years, but decades, that they're so successful that someone else would say, how did you do that? And I think we as black people, we don't want to look stupid, so we don't want to ask or throw our ideals out there and then have them where we would perceive them being knocked down. We don't know how to see that somebody wants to help you make them better. So we don't ask the questions. So we just jump out here and we do some things and then, hey, what do you think? And opposed to, I'm right here, what would be the best way to go about this? We don't want to do that. We don't want to look stupid. We don't want to look ignorant. And that's not going to be a successful business.
Now, I've got somebody on the line here who I did want to speak to that dovetails nicely into what we've been talking about here. Hello, Simone.
Hi.
Now, Simone is a realtor, and
yes,
she's been doing it now for about a year, and she's still working on even getting her gang together. Sister, I have a question for you. In your last year of being a realtor here, And you, something's echoing behind you. You may want to turn speakers off if you have them on.
Okay.
In your last year of being a realtor here, I want to find out, when black folk approach you, you got something echoing back there behind you. If you're on a Bluetooth...
Okay, is that better?
Off. Okay, do not turn it down. Make sure you turn it off, because otherwise it will pick it up every time.
Okay.
What you want to do, what I want to find out here is that, particularly, I'm not sure how many black folk you dealt with, though the area you're in, I'm pretty sure you have. What is it that you see as the biggest mistake that first-time home buyers who come to you make?
Well, the biggest mistake that I'm experiencing is it's hard for them to even qualify. And then when they do qualify, they end up getting excited that their credit score has improved, and they end up going out and doing something crazy, like buying some furniture before they even get a house, close on it, or putting a loan out for a car. And then they turn around and look crazy when they can't, you know, when they go to underwriting, and they can't do anything further. So they're like, well, I was approved, but yes, you went out and also bought a car. So now you're no longer eligible. That's one of the major things that I'm seeing. And they're not understanding that they are working with a realtor, they're working with a professional, and this professional is here to help you. They just feel as if they can basically go to their limit and try to spend as much as they can for their house. Even though you're qualified for $100,000, doesn't mean that you should buy a house for $100,000. You should still stay in your means and be comfortable, because in the next year or two, you're going to foreclose. So they don't understand that either, even if they do get to that point. So that's a lot of things that I'm seeing and I'm experiencing with a lot of African-American.
So you're meeting
buyers.
Up to people who are over-leveraged. They are trying to perform material therapy. They're trying, instead of trying to increase their net worth, they're trying to increase their self-worth.
Exactly.
Or what in their eyes is their self-worth. And in reality, all they are is a person in a whole bunch of debt with low self-esteem.
Exactly.
And they're hoping that this house, this car will give them self-esteem. And, of course, that never happens. And your job is to make sure you all don't get soaked while doing that, dealing with this person who's doing that. How often among our people do you run into that?
Very often. Very, very often. Even when I have my buyer's consultation, I've even made it a point for them to stand, raise your hand in the air. Just, I mean, it's silly, but raise your hand in the air and let's read these 10 commandments. I shall not buy a car. I shall not put open a new credit card. I should not do whatever is on that list before you close on your house. Close in your house, get the keys, and then do what you want to do. Or that I should not switch jobs. Just silly things that people do mess them completely up, and they barely even made it in the beginning. So they get excited that they are able to get a house, and they feel as if, oh, I made it now, and they can go out and do whatever they want. And actually they're ruining the little credit that they already had.
Now, how difficult is it for you to counsel people or talk to them to tell them that you're messing up from the beginning? How receptive are they to it, or are they?
They're not. They feel as if, oh, I came this far. I've done this by myself. I'm here. It's okay. I'm okay. But then they send me this long email saying, Simone, I'm so sorry that I wasted your time. Can we try again? You know, I'm compassionate. I will send them email back and say, it's okay. Let's keep trying. Let's go back to the drawing board. Let's see what you need to do, what you need to fix, and let's revisit in 6 months and see if you're eligible again. But the thing that a lot of people don't understand is you're renting from someone and you're paying their mortgage plus a little extra that they're spending for themselves to buy the nice cars that you're trying to buy and, you know, spend the money that you're trying to buy. You're paying these people to do that when you can do it on your own. You can have a nice house and spend half of the money that you're paying in rent. A lot of our people don't understand that. They don't get it, and they don't understand equity. They don't understand it. And it's sad. It really is.
Can I say something?
Yes, if you permission.
I too dabbled a little bit in real estate, and what I found out is that African-American people, their eyes are bigger than their pockets. And like Simone mm-hmm. was saying, they don't, you know, they look at it at a mortgage as when I get a raise or if I get a raise that I could do this. And they tend to want to go big, and they want all the options and all the extras. And that first house for the first few months, oh, it's okay. But after about 6 months, it becomes a burden because you bit off more than you can chew. So instead of going big, you need to go within your means. And they have these fantasies of how I can, you know, pull this off, not knowing that they're not going to be able to do it. And to tell them that, okay, if you're a couple, if this person should lose their job, can this other person pay this mortgage? So they don't look at things like that. You know,
they don't.
Yeah, do I have 8 months of a mortgage in the hole? They don't look at things like that. And like you said, they do. They go and run and get a credit card, or somebody, they go to the counter at Macy's and would you like a credit card? And they say, yeah. Now, understanding, you're in escrow. You can't be fooled with your credit. That takes your points down. So yeah, we have a big problem.
That's so true. That is so true. I had one young lady that she barely qualified for $100,000. And then they get the big head and they think that, oh, they qualify for this amount. And they don't like anything in their price range. They're like thinking that, oh, that's to this or that's to that. But this is what you can afford. So this is what, you know, this is what you can afford. Let's be realistic. And then we went out for months, and I was dealing with her for months. And next thing you know, she switched lenders, and she couldn't qualify anymore. And when I talked to the lender, I asked what happened, and he told me she had 21 inquiries. So within the 3 months that we were working together, she was basically applying for every credit card that she thought she could get. 21 inquiries? That was ridiculous. Ridiculous. So
what is she trying to do with all these credit cards?
I have no idea.
Because, you see, a house is the single biggest purchase you will make other than a business. So what are you trying to purchase all – what are you trying to get all this other stuff? Because a credit card is a plastic loan is what it is. And you've already trying to take out a mortgage loan. Now you want to take out a bunch of others. You're trying to take out all these loans because in reality you do not have enough money to pay for any of this. That's
exactly. And what they don't understand, as soon as you get approved for that house, credit cards are going to be in your mailbox all day long, every day, 24/7.
Mm-hmm. Because that's one thing that I do. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's one thing that I do tell them. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
That's one thing that I do tell them. I let them know, now that you have been approved, everyone is going to come at you. They're going to approve you for everything now, because now you can buy a house. Especially once you buy that house, you're definitely going to get credit cards in your mailbox every day. That doesn't mean that you should get them. Just know that your credit is good and continue to try to keep it that way. And just because you can qualify for $100,000, buy a $70,000 house. Don't buy a $100,000 house.
Exactly. Start small, fix it up, change the landscape of the land, you know, add some flowers, a nice lawn, paint, you know, maybe put a little bit of addition into it, and then you can sell that house and get the bigger house that you want. But we tend to want everything right now. So we overindulge financially, and it becomes a burden. And now we can't even enjoy our home because we got to work like a dog, because we got to be able to pay for it. Because once you default on a house, you're done, basically.
That's so true. It's so true. Most of my clientele are people that I went to school with, people that, you know, that I grew up with in the neighborhood that I used to live in, which was in Decatur. But I currently live in Woodstock, which is East Cobb. It's just upper middle class area, and it's predominantly white. And most of the realtors that work in the office with me, they're telling me I'm dealing with the wrong client all the time. All the time. It's basically they're telling me to wash my hands away from the people that I know and deal with the people in my neighborhood only. They say, you're wasting your time. Don't do it. They tell me all the time. And I don't want to do that because I want our people to have homes and to rebuild the community. But it's so hard. It's so hard dealing with them at the same time.
Well, it's not enough for you to want them to rebuild the community. They have to put themselves in a position where they are able to do that. And if they're just refusing, let's talk about that then, Simone. What for these people who do want that $200,000 house, they only qualify for $100,000. What would you tell them? Because they want to get more credit. So what would you tell them?
I would tell them that they need to continue to pay their bills on time. And, of course, that they have credit cards to get rid of the in-store credit cards and keep only major credit cards. Also to use only 30% of your credit as well, carry that. So if you have a $1,000 card, you need to only use $300. You only need to carry a balance of $300 because that $700 that you have is your credit, actually. And that's what shows good on your report. I also explained to them, even if you have a $300, you're carrying a $300 balance, don't pay it all off when you get paid. You continue to still pay portions of it so that your credit can build. Definitely stay away, you know, from in-store credit. That's the main thing. A lot of people definitely fall into that trap. In-store credits are horrible. The APR is high, ridiculously high, and it eats your money and your income. Stay on that job for a long time. Stay there and continue to save money. Those are the main things that I continue to tell them. And, of course, if you can qualify for this $100,000 house, go ahead, purchase the house, live there. Fix it up, like she was saying, fix it up, and then in a year, well, maybe 3 years, then you can resell it, or you can turn it into an income property for yourself and rent it out. And then you have income coming in.
Folks have you talked to who want to do that? I mean, who are serious and actually brought up proper credentials to do that kind of thing, to turn this property into investment property?
None. And I mentioned it to, especially to the ones that don't qualify for a lot of money, if it's only $60,000 or $70,000 that they qualify for, and they have that high-end taste, I tell them you can have that high-end taste in your property, but you can eventually get there, but you're not there yet. So live here, turn this into income for yourself, and then you can go ahead and get that $150,000 house that you're looking at because you cannot afford it because you have this extra income coming in. But they don't want to hear that. They want the cake right now. They want it all now. And they're microwave people or whatever they call it. They just feel like it's supposed to be instant, and they don't want to put in the work behind it.
Okay, let's you and I talk about that real quick because, and if I say anything that is inaccurate, you call me on it, okay?
Sure.
I'm serious. This is I Check the Black Authority Day, if you can do it. Because there are people out there who have questioned my credentials in certain regards. And okay, we got somebody here who does real estate. So if I say something that's real jacked up and stupid and wrong, Simone will call me on it. Right, Simone?
I will.
Okay. I promise you won't get video shanked.
Okay.
This week. Next week. It usually takes me about a week or two to get you together. So if you make me look bad, no, just kidding. If I'm sure you've done your research. No, if I'm inaccurate about anything, I want you to go ahead and call me on it because I want people to have reliable information. So if somehow what I'm saying is just totally wrong, call me on it. Now, when you are trying to do investment property, the best way to go about it, because I get asked this all the time back when I used to talk to people about real estate and investment property. TBA, what do? The key to it is to get the first property. Everybody wants to know how we can buy 3 and 4 houses. And I tell them that's wrong. That's not the way you do it. The key is to get one. And once you have the first property, try to pay for it cash so it's free and clear. Once you have the first one, you can use that as your equity to get the second one. And that's where it goes from there. But what usually I get when I encounter people is they try to figure out some way that they can get a loan or a bridge loan or whatever for 3 or 4 properties to start off with. And what happens is they're leveraged on all these properties simultaneously and can't figure out why they can never flip it over so that they can double or triple or whatever, continue the process with the houses that they have. They tried to bypass acquiring the first one and instead end up in a situation where they're just clawing their way uphill from here on in. And very, very few people ever make that work, by the way. You're so leveraged in. Very, very few people ever make that work. But when it comes to investment property, really the best situation is to pay for it outright so that you actually have the first one, and then you can start taking out your loans against what you actually have. Because now you actually have something that's worth some collateral to go to a bank with, but so many people try to bypass that. Now, if I'm wrong about that or if you disagree with that, call me on it.
No, you're absolutely right.
Okay, because just in case there's fakers and frauds out and whatnot who got questions, y'all got questions. I'm not guessing my way through this. I know this. So go ahead and please explain what I'm wrong about.
Not wrong at all. You're not wrong. That is definitely the way to do it, is to get that first property and take the equity out of that property to buy the next property. That's what it's all about. And that's what one of my mentors actually told me, the person that got me into real estate. She have 4 or 5 houses around Georgia that she collect rent from each month. And I asked her, how did she do it? And that's exactly what she said. I bought my first house, and I took the equity from that house and bought my second, and it continued to go on from there. Now she lives in a $600,000 house in Sandy Springs, if anyone knows where that is. It's not a cheap place to live at all.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
As far as equity is concerned, do you think that African Americans fail because they take that equity out and they buy a car, or they buy a pool, or they buy a motorcycle, or they buy some jewelry, and they're just sitting and waiting for that equity to build, not to reinvest the proper way, but to buy a boat or, you know, some other gigantic materialistic thing? And the second question I have for you is that they don't understand to buy where there's going to be growth potential, you know, where
exactly.
They did the research that says this is going to be the community to be in for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they don't understand that either?
They don't understand that. They just feel, I think people get sidetracked. They feel as if the money came, they feel that it can continue to come. And it's not that easy. You take the money out of the house, you need to either buy another, or you need to fix that house up as best as you can for the area that you are living in so that you can be able to sell it, or you can be able to rent it out. and start that income. But a lot of people don't understand it. They just, like I said before, they just want to be flashy, and they don't want to weigh it out. They don't want the patience that go behind becoming an investor. Basically, that's what it is, becoming an investor and investing in property.
Actually want to learn how to become an investor. We just want to be a hustler. We want somebody to give us a three-step process. We don't have to do any research. We don't have to gain any knowledge or mastery. Just show me who I got to pay, and then this thing will become a cash cow or a money machine. We bring that consumer mindset to some place it simply does not belong. You cannot start talking about being an investor and walking in with the expectations of a consumer and actually make it work. Because a place like Denver, for example, Denver did not suffer at all through the subprime mortgage crisis. Housing values there did not suffer at all. Charleston didn't suffer at all. Oklahoma City, I can go down a list of places in North Dakota, South Dakota, where the shale is, didn't suffer at all. And if you weren't in one of those places that didn't suffer, you probably did pretty well, but it's about understanding where you are at. Just because there is a house to buy does not mean necessarily that you can turn into an investment property per se. And doesn't mean that the same rules that work in one of the places that didn't have a problem are going to work for you. Maybe you need to buy, maybe you got enough money to buy a $30,000, $40,000 house outright. As Mona said, buy it, fix it up, make it worth $60,000 or $70,000, sell that. Now we can go back and start talking about something else now.
Mm-hmm.
Those TV shows, that's what those guys do. Black folks try to figure out how to not do that, and it doesn't work.
And another important thing is that a lot of people need to, like Mona said, be conscious of where you're buying your home, because you may have a problem with reselling it. You have to go in knowing that you will be able to turn profit on this property when you purchase it. Definitely looking at the school systems is a great way to be able to tell if that's a great property that you want to invest in or not. Even though you may not necessarily be worrying about the school if you're single or, you know, don't have kids, still, the person that's going to live there may care about the school, and you don't want to be in a horrible school system where no one wants to come and bring their kids.
Exactly. And if you want to purchase, we tend to want our first house to be our dream house, and we don't understand the concept of a fixer-up, and we don't understand to go into a affluent neighborhood that has an excellent school system and get the cheapest house that's in the area, because once their property value goes up, your little house's value goes up too. Not maybe to the extent of theirs, but you're still growing on your property. And I think we want to live in the house, but we're not saying this is my house plus this is a huge investment. This is going to make more money for me as I live in this house. And that's where I think we go wrong as well.
That's exactly true. That's exactly true. The house that my husband and I purchased 4 years ago, it was a fixer-upper, and it was priced at $115,000, which was way below the value of the houses in the neighborhood. And I remember going to one of the HOA meetings, and people were complaining that the houses were selling for less than, you know, what the other house, you know, that they paid their houses for. A house recently sold, two houses down from mine, for $200,000. So with us buying our house for $115,000 and slowly fixing it up, we will make profit when we decide to sell. If we do, or we can rent it out and rent it out at $1,500 a month with no problem. And we only pay at a 115 mortgage. That's a lot of people don't understand. At 115 purchase price, you can pay $700 a month for your mortgage. So with me paying $700, I'm pocketing $800 if I decide to rent it out to somebody.
Now, why did you choose the figure, when you say if I rent it out for $1,500 a month, why did you choose that figure? Because I've explained this to everybody over the years, that there's basically a basic formulation that's used, or should I say it's a commonly used formulation, but just so there's another moment to check TBA. Let's see if he was wrong, because you're fakers and frauds. When you asked them this, they couldn't tell you. I explained it years ago, so go ahead and tell us, why did you say it's a $115,000 house if I can rent it for $1,500 a month after we fix it up and everything? Why did you choose that number?
Well, of course, I want to double my income. I want to double the amount that I'm spending a month so that I can be able to use it towards another property. But at the same time, when you do a CMA, well, comparative market analysis in the area, that's what the prices are going for. I really can't explain it. I'm not exactly sure how to explain it, but
in renting, it's customary that the rent will be 1% of the value of the house.
Right.
Typically speaking, is that typically rent is going to be 1% of value of the house. So if it's a $100,000 house, usually the rent will be $1,000 a month. If it's a better neighborhood, you might be able to spot that. But what I'm saying is that typically in rent, the ground floor is 1% of the value of the house, typically speaking. So in your case, what you say is, well, if I'm buying a house, I'm actually paying less than 1% a month of the mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually
mm-hmm.
could stay well within that 1% and still be making a very good profit on it. And what you say is, I can actually spike it over that 1% because I'm in a pretty good neighborhood, so I can actually spike it over that and start at $1,500 a month, which you could probably get away with. And if you do that, then
okay.
I'm way ahead of the game at this point. But here's the difference, Simone. You actually went in with a plan and with some thought. You didn't get that house because your ego is small, or maybe it isn't. Maybe it is. I don't know. But you didn't buy the house on that basis. I do know that. You put more thought
exactly.
into it than how does this make my spinal cord quiver? You put more into it than that. Or taking selfies of yourself for Facebook in front of the house. Look what I bought. You did more thought than that. And most black, I mean, hell, Moni, you see it. Folks up
yep.
here and buy a house, it's straight to Facebook, straight to a group. They show you every room in the damn house. If I was a burglar, I wouldn't even have to scope the place out. It's help for the relationship talk.
That's
I don't even
exactly.
have to. Tell me wrong about that. Anybody out there, right or wrong?
Right. That's true. Yes, we definitely did go in with a plan. And I did mention that on Facebook that my husband and I have a flooring company as well. So with us being able to have that background with, renovating and just we wanted a fixer-upper. And we wanted to be in a great school system so that our kids can go to a good school but also be able to fix this house and make our money. Do what we need to do. This was our first one.
How many kids do you have?
Two.
Okay. Well, you're thinking ahead with more than most black folk do. They usually get kids and then figure out who's going to pay the child support. So
have
your game on that. That's a very good thing to have. Do you have a website?
I do. Can I give it out?
Of course. You've built a relationship, Simone.
Thank you. It's homewithsimone.com.
How do you spell three different ways to spell Simone? So how do we spell your website?
Holmes, H-O-M-E-S, with W-I-T-H, Simone, S-I-M-O-N-E, .com.
And I have
awesome.
One more quick question.
Sure.
I'm sorry. Do you advise them about fixer-uppers to not fix it up too lavish? Or to
yes.
not take away bedrooms and turn them into dens? Do you advise them on that also? Because I think when people go to resell their houses and they think the house across the street, I have more than them, and they They sold immediately, but I can't sell my house because I knocked out a wall, or I took away a bedroom, or I made a $20,000 kitchen, but the area only calls for a $10,000 kitchen. So do you advise them on that as well?
Yes, that's very important. You can over renovate your house and it won't sell because you have to know what area you're in. You have to know, your realtor should definitely know what area you're in and what you're able to do and what you should do and what you should not do. I see a lot of homes that they take the garage and turn it into a bedroom. You shouldn't do that because that's taking away value from your house. Like you say, making a three-bedroom house into a two-bedroom house, that's taking away value from your house. You can, even though it may look spectacular, that doesn't matter. You're taking away value from the next buyer, and that resale value
function
is what you should have. I'm sorry?
And the function as well, correct?
And the function of the house, yes. And you should always have resale value in the back of your head all the time, constantly. It's things I want to do to my house that I cannot bring myself to do because I know that if I do it, I won't be able to get the most money out of my house when I do decide to sell it. So I have to continue to keep it as it is, and I always think about resale value, always, even from the paint color that I put in my house because I never know when I may decide to sell it. Even though paint is something really, really simple, it's an easy fix, I still think about the paint color, especially on the outside of your house. The paint color of your house and the front of your house should always have the same blinds in each window. I'm maybe going a little bit too far, but these are things that are very important for the appearance of your home. And
I always
say resale value, always.
Yeah, because what you're saying is that that's things that people can see from the outside, but most of us or people who've been in the house so long, they don't think about that. By the way, you've been in this house all this time. You're used to that. But somebody who's pulling up in front of you for the first time, they notice that you got green blinds over here and blue blinds over there and red blinds. They notice that kind of stuff. Or vertical blinds here and horizontal over there. They notice that kind of thing that you've just grown to be callous to. It's kind of like what Donald Trump said, believe it or not. He actually said something that's very bright. And as somebody who's had a car dealer's license and everything, with a car dealer's license, I know what's necessary to sell a car. And one of the things that happens is, for example, I meet people all the time who want to sell a car. They didn't wash the car. Simple thing. The car runs great, but you didn't wash it. Coming over here talking about paying $5,000 for this 10-year-old car, maybe I would have, but you ain't washed it. Think about the presentation that you're making. That $5,000 car looks like $3,000 right now, dude. Real talk.
Right.
That's so true. And you have to want to invite the people in. Most people make the decision just from pulling up to this house. They make the decision if they want to buy this house or not before they even get inside. They've already made up their mind. Even though they may go in, they've already made up their mind pulling up to the house if they want to buy the house or not.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're considering the neighborhood. They're considering a bunch of things that you haven't really thought about, and your impression may not be their impression. There's a lot that goes into it. And like you said, for a realtor, that gives you a third party who's unbiased and will look at it realistically, hopefully not just thinking about cushion, but if they're just hearing some outrageous stuff, it's a whole lot better than listening to your Uncle Henry.
And people cannot see past a lot of simple cosmetic fixes. They can't see it. So as I said, you definitely want to be mindful of resale value all the time. That's key. Just remember, even though that green tile that you're looking at may look fantastic and you may love it while you're there, but when you get ready to move, that buyer is not going to, they can't get past that green tile. Don't do it. Don't do
it. Less is more. And all those different color bedrooms and purple room and pink room, when people come in there, they... It's better to have neutral colors, a cohesive.
Oh, I've bought one place that had they let their teenager paint the walls black.
Yes.
And they put up like stars and astrological symbols. Glow in the dark. Flat room with glow in the dark moons and stars all over the walls and the ceilings. I'm not joking.
I was actually in the house today that I was showing a client, and every wall was a different color, every single wall. I took pictures of it. I was going to put it on my Instagram. But every single wall was different colors. It wasn't neutral colors. It was green, lime green, pink, purple, yellow. It was a fun house. Let's just say that. And when they first walk into the living room, they had a huge bar mounted to the floor in the living room that they made. It was ridiculous. It was horrible. My buyer turned right around and walked out. They didn't even give it a try.
Well, a good lesson has gone unheeded. Just out of curiosity, do you deal with commercial estate, or are you planning on that?
I'm planning. I definitely want to get into commercial real estate. That's where.
Why?
That's where the commission is. That's where it is. I want to get into it. I want to work with investors only and commercial, because I do a lot of driving, and I want to get out of that. But I haven't learned commercial real estate yet. That's something I'm interested in.
Well, I talked to Don Peebles last year. It worked out really well for him. So he's in the top 10 richest black men in America. So it worked out well for him. That's all I can say about that. So definitely I hope things go well there, Simone. And for everybody, if you're in the Atlanta area and need a realtor, it's Homes by – is that Homes for Simone or Homes by Simone?
Homes with Simone.
Neither none of the above. Okay. HomesWithSimone.com. HomesWithSimone, SIMONE.com. Now, Simone, I wanted to demonstrate something here tonight, which is why I wanted you to call in. You see, when I can ask you questions in front of everybody, it turns into an experience that most black people are not accustomed to. A lot of folk have been listening to you and I talk here for the last 30 minutes. And we've done pretty good about retaining people and their attention. And they've learned a lot, whether they say so or not. But more than that, they've learned how two people who conduct business interact with each other. You didn't walk in here throwing out your, trying to name drop business. You didn't come up in here trying to name drop your website. You didn't come up in here trying to tell everybody how they can be your customers or whatever. You came in, you gave knowledge, you gave information. You earned the right to give out your website. So at this point right now, I got no problem with you posting it up. I've got no problem with you saying it at this point. Now, of course, I'm sure you're going to have enough etiquette not to walk in the front door screaming your website and whatnot. That's just unprofessional. And most black folk don't understand that. But through this interaction, you have started the process of building a relationship. You've given verifiable information that I can validate myself. And that, brothers and sisters, is the way that it is done. That's how it's done.
Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us here. And definitely, if you have any other information that you want to get out here or in Intelligent Black Society, please feel free to do so.
I just want to say, Black First, I've been listening for a long time, and I promise, I never thought that I will be speaking on here, so I'm really impressed, and I just want to say thank you, Jason, for reaching out to me, because I don't think I've ever would have called in and actually spoken to you, and I'm learning a lot. I'm happy that I was able to also give information as well, and just Black First.
Black First, sister, thank you very much for joining us here tonight. Please call in again. You see, building a relationship is about give and take, not take and take more. Too many black folk do not understand it's about give and take. I give something, you give something. Actually, I like the words give and give. I give something, you give something. Show us that you're qualified to be here, because anybody can put up a website. I have a higher standard at the Black Channel and in Intelligent Black Society. I have a higher standard. And that standard means that people have to give verifiable, viable, actionable information. What she gave you all tonight was actionable. All of you folk who want to sit up here and talk about buying real estate and whatnot, tell me, when's the last time you tuned into The Fraud and heard somebody just explain it to you straight out like that? When's the last time you tuned into these internet psychos who are stalking Umar Johnson, or talking trash about Tariq Nasheed or me, when was the last time that any of them sat you all down and chopped up game like we did tonight? When was the last time that occurred? Very simple, people. When was the last time you heard that? When was the last time you saw that? That you knew that the people you were listening to actually knew what the hell they were talking about? Now, you walked out of here tonight with actionable information. Now, will you do what's necessary to act on it? That's up to you. It's like working out. Now, you can do what's necessary to get flat abs, or you can keep eating pizzas. You can do what is necessary to get the proper funds to purchase that investment property or personal property, or you can keep messing around. It's up to you. But now you got information. Don't blame us if you didn't. If you didn't act on it. Now, what she told you all, I've been saying for years. Now you heard it from an actual realtor who verified and validated that what TVA said about investing. Yep, that's right. Now, for those of you who've been listening to me for half a decade, you had this information half a decade ago. And when I talked to you all about buying adjudicated properties, you had this information half a decade ago. About getting your dealer's license, you had it half a decade ago. And that's why I've got no patience today, because I gave the game half a decade ago. When I tell you go through the archive and listen, it's been out there for half a decade. You just haven't acted on it. Let's grab another call out here. Caller from 313, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Yeah, Jason, this is Von from Detroit. That was a good conversation I had, and I was... It reaffirmed what I already knew, but it was good to know that I was on the right track. Hey, let me say this. You were talking about street hustlers earlier, and have they gone from the street to a brick-and-mortar building. I mean, I've seen that one time, a guy by the name of Hot Sauce Williams. Anybody from Cleveland know about Hot Sauce Williams? Back in the 70s, this guy used to ride around one of those three-wheel ice cream trucks from the 50s. He used to wear the chef's hat with the white jacket and everything, selling hot tamales. Now, most of us in the hood back in the 70s didn't know what hot tamales was. But he knew what it was, and he knew it was a market for it, and he sold hot tamales. Then later on, he moved up to an actual ice cream truck and selling hot tamales and reds out of from ice cream truck. I had never seen it before. I think I've seen it once or twice in the last 50, 40 years. But
well, that's my thing. That was my thing. I know one guy who went from a street vendor to a brick and mortar back in the 70s. Vaughn, most of us were on this Black Channel were born in the 70s. So you're saying, wait, right after Huey Newton, there was one nigga. Wow, for real? We got to go back.
Yeah, well, some of us went back a little bit.
No, I'm just saying, nobody since then, brother?
I'm afraid to say none that I have noticed. I'm pretty sure
wow.
People have advanced.
By the way, you're in Detroit, and you're talking about Cleveland.
Yeah, I'm from both directions. Cleveland, Detroit, like hours away.
What I'm saying is that even you in Detroit, you're like, well, it was way back in the 70s in Cleveland, so it's a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. I knew a black man who went from being a street vendor to his brick and mortar.
Yeah, and in truth, those businesses are still in operations, I would probably say, 50 years later, because I remember from the 70s, I'm pretty sure it was around before that. I can't speak of too many black businesses that have that type of long longevity that's still open. And family-owned, as far as I know, family-owned. I mean, it just sells but ribs. And if you go back to their original stores, ain't nothing but shitholes. It's like going back in time, like you're going into some backwood Alabama rib place, and the place hasn't been changed in 30-plus years. But the product they sell is good. And that's the dilemma here. So I got a good product. I got good food, and I keep people coming back generationally, not just, you know, folks in the neighborhood, but their kids come back. But my place is not equal, aesthetically, with what I will find in the burbs. And, you know, I went to Google and Googled both locations. There's a hot sauce wham, there's a B&M barbecue. They're both like 50 years in business. And when you read the remarks and you see the picture of the people who's making the remarks, they're not accustomed to what we're accustomed in the urban core. So they would have that certain, you know, demand better services out of the look of the building, the look of the people, the smile on their face, the expressions on their face. They want more. But for whatever reason, we don't want it because we never really had it if we stay within the boundaries of our general area. But there is a product there to sell, and it sells, and if you just stay within the customs of your neighborhood, you can make money. So there's a dilemma. I know I can stay within my niche and make money, but I can't broaden unless I broaden outside the people I'm accustomed to dealing with, away from them. I think that earlier caller was saying the same thing, how somebody was recommending that she move away from her people, but she wants to help them out. Well, there's still money to be made with your people. Now, you have to, do you elevate them, or you just sell them what they're accustomed to, let them make your money that way, and you keep on stepping? And it's an interesting dilemma, though. As a matter of fact, Hot Sauce Williams is so popular, there's been two Food Network shows that came to his store. Well, he's passed now, but whoever controls it now came to his location and did stories on him. So the guy is national. The place is nationally known. And but again, you need to read the comments from the people outside the neighborhood or outside the urban core. They're not too keen on it. They like the food, but they're not too keen on them. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how you just balance that out, because I have an idea for a business within the urban core, but I know within that core there's that phrase, the black tax. You have to pay that black tax, which is going to be, you know, not the best customer service with the people you hire. And yet, as hard as you can try, the people who will give you the best, I don't think it's going to be in that neighborhood where that money's being made. And you have to take somebody within the neighborhood to feel for the people in that general area to feel comfortable dealing with them.
Well, let me tell you what you do about that, though. What you do if you open up a business you don't want to hire in the neighborhood, go to a temp agency and get somebody who's not from the neighborhood.
That's interesting. That's interesting. A temp agency.
No, brother, I've already been there and done that and everything. You go to a temp agency, they'll do the background check and everything before you even get started. Get somebody who's temporary. If it works out, great. If it doesn't, send their ass back. But you can. That's a better way of doing things than just taking folk right off the street, man.
Oh, I know there's a price for when you do that. There's definitely a price.
Yes, there is, but what's the price of dealing with somebody who starts off and ain't showing for work? What's the price of that? See,
you won't be in too much longer.
We as black people keep getting messed up because, as an old black man told me once when I said something dumb about buying a business, now I said it was too much money to pay. He said that's the problem with black people. Black people don't believe in paying for what something is worth. A good employee is what makes your money for your business. They are not an expense. They are a necessary maintenance and upkeep, a necessary part, mechanism of your business, a necessary component. You go and try to skimp on the most essential component of your labor. That's not where you skimp. You skimp on the fluid, on the stuff you use to clean the floors. You clean the floors, but we get the cheap stuff for the floors. You skimp on the window washing cleaner. You don't skimp on employees. If things work out, you pay the fee to the temp agency to buy them, and then now you've already vetted them and everything. We know they're good to go. Keep rolling. That's what GM does. A bunch of Fortune 500 companies here in Shreveport, that's what they do. Now, if that's what they do, why is that? What do they know? What does economics know that Niggonomics don't?
Yeah, you made a good point. That's something I've learned something here. All the vetting is done for you. You know what you are getting, and all you do is just hire them.
you can, by the way, you can tell the temp agency, I do not want anybody who comes from this area. Don't tell them you don't want black folk, but you can tell them I don't want anybody who comes from this area. And they're a private business. They're just going to say, okay, nobody from this area. And that's it. That's right. That's right. You can do that.
That's pretty damn good.
But you have to pay for it. You can't get it if you don't pay for it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I guess that's one way of getting around that system of working within the urban core. And but like I said before, hey, there's money to be made. I'm not one to totally abandon because I see the potential. But then again, you also got to notice with black folks now, I see there's a class difference that's developing that I noticed. I don't know how long it's been out there. I notice now, if I go, let's say, 5 miles outside the border of the city of Detroit, I'm pretty much dealing with somebody within the city. However, if I deal with black folks 10 or 15 miles, I'm dealing with a whole different character, and I have to find my way to adapt to understand what their needs are, as opposed to already knowing because I'm thinking, okay, we got a history together. Our history ain't necessarily together anymore because you move too far out, especially a generation or two later, we're not the same people anymore.
That's why we're cycling them out. That's why we're doing our job and we're cycling them out. But the time is over. Complaining about them, brother. We just got to execute our strategies. White folk do it. Asians do it. It's time for intelligent black society to do the same. No more complaining about landscape. Execute our strategies. But the difference is, you notice I had a strategy for dealing with potential employee manpower problems. You didn't have one. Now you got one. I go in knowing what's my strategy. If we know it's a problem, that is not an excuse for not doing business. Remember what I've always taught you all. A business ownership is the art, not the science, the art of solving problems. You solve a problem by offering a product or service that solves a problem. You hire employees. If there are problems with employees, you solve problems. Great business owners are the ones who solve problems.
Absolutely, brother. Hey, I'm not going to hold you up, but black folks.
Can I say one thing?
Yes,
please.
We have to remember also that TBA told us that business is not social work. We are in business to make money. So when you have a business, you're in the business to make money. You hire people that also want to make money as well. And you have to remember, too, that you have to keep up your business. Perfect example is a beauty shop. Stylists will go to another shop just because it looks better, because they want their clients to be in a better environment. So we have to remember that, too. And if somebody is on your team, I can't hire a stylist that only wants to make $300. That's not going to be good for my business, because as I grow, they grow. And if you're a business owner that's passing out paychecks, they can get those raises as we grow, because everybody is hustling. Everybody is doing their best. And that's how we grow, and that's how we get bigger, and that's how our paychecks get bigger. But if you got some little lazy person that's just in here for just for themselves, again, a business is about teamwork. We want to have the baddest hairstyle on the block. We want people flocking in here, you know, a waiting list for stylists to want to work here, a waiting list for a cook to want to wait here, a waitress to want to work here, because we're constantly growing. And as we're growing, if your business looks shabby to the outside eye, that's saying y'all not making no money. And the majority of your black people want to go to where everybody is going to and it's 5-star so they can have that bragging right. So people will say, yeah, they got good food, but it's a hole in the wall, and they don't want to be associated with that. So we have to keep the aesthetics up on our building, and we have to hire the best. That's going to be the best for our businesses.
Okay. Simone, let me ask you this. So I'm trying to get a grasp of what's going on with this particular rib place. If they've never worked on the aesthetics, and well, they maybe did it once in 30 years, then how is it they were able to grow out of this one building to have 5 rib places, across the now I'm across the city. It's all on the east side. I think it's one on the west side. But if you're from Cleveland, you know the east side is basically all black, and the west side is white, majority white. But they were able to just keep it dirty and filthy, but expand. So are you saying, is it possible that the product could be so good that people will ignore the look of the place and keep on coming? Or is it that black folks will just accept anything and keep giving their money out? Well, what's your opinion on that?
I would say that black folks do tend to accept anything, but I would also say you have to think about how low his overhead is. If his overhead is very low and his profits are more, he may be reluctant to add on. He may be reluctant because now it's not about community. It's about me. Whenever we go back to me, we don't upgrade ourselves because we're hogging all the money. So if his overhead is low, why would he want to make it even higher by, you know, painting the place or putting some more furniture into it? That's a me concept again.
Yeah, and I guess
my concept as well. If this is my business is like my woman. It's a reflection on me. It is a reflection of me. I simply would not go out there any old kind of way. Most black businesses fail because they try to give the lowest common denominator. So you might have 5% of us who the product is so amazing that people are willing to go into this broke down shack. But let me tell you, the first time Paula Deen shows up with a nice, squeaky, clean place, guess who's going out of business?
Exactly. And your customers are not loyal, so they will leave. You could have been giving them excellent service for years, but as soon as that cleaner, brighter, shinier place, they want to be a part of that. They're gone.
Yeah, so I guess those places, they pretty much had a trap customer base. They weren't going nowhere. I mean, one generation goes out, another one comes in. I mean, you know, there was nobody, there's no competition. So I guess no competition, you just build your clientele and spread from there. And it doesn't matter what
black
you give them.
Black people only used to get their nails done by other black women. Today, who does nails?
Oh, absolutely.
Asians at Walmart if the price is right and the place is clean. So that's the wrong, totally the wrong idea for black folks to be walking in the 21st century with. That might have flown in 1914. That's not going to fly in 2014. Not anymore. All you're really doing is leaving yourself a sitting duck for when the Hispanics or the Asians come in doing the exact same product that you're doing, offering the exact same service, only they offered it in a better establishment, and then you're wondering where your customers are.
Yeah, I think I heard the same thing with Dominicans now. Now, so they taking a big chunk. Although Dominicans are a good chunk African, they don't see themselves African. That's another issue. But I hear they are coming in, doing beauty salons, less money, longer hours, and they're starting to bite into the salon business for, let's say, African Americans. So the competition's not there, and folks better step up their game, and they want to be around. But thanks for the conversation, man. I appreciate it. I ain't going to hold you up, but black
now,
first.
Vaughn.
What's that? All right, what's going on?
Are we forgetting something?
I guess I must have. What if I'm forgetting here?
Do you have something to say to Mona?
Help me out. What can I? What am I missing here to pass on or receive from Mona?
I think you have something to say to Mona, don't you?
I appreciate the knowledge you passed on, and we are learning.
I don't think it sounds like that. I think it starts with something closer to Mona. I think it starts somewhere around there.
All right, brother. Oh, boy, you tested me today. I wish I can.
It's not a test, my friend. The last time you spoke to Mona, you were very disrespectful to her, and I haven't forgotten that. So I'm going to.
Oh my God, brother! Let me tell you something. I can't remember. Help me out. What did I say?
I remember.
All right. Well, let me say this. Whatever I said that was offensive, let me apologize now. And you know, whatever direction I was going in that conversation, it was all for the increased knowledge or focus on where my mind was at that time. So if I offended, let me, apologize, because my intention was always good. It might be the mannerism I brung my conversation that was wrong. So if Mona, if you can work with me on that, I can learn from my errors, as I always do, and accept whatever knowledge you have. You're a very knowledgeable woman, and I'm always open to listen out what you have to say.
No problem. Black first, brother.
Absolutely, black first. Y'all take it easy.
From 910, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hi, good evening. This is Anna Dawson from Wilmington, North Carolina. Can you hear me?
Okay, what was that first name again?
It's Anna, A-N-A.
Hello, Anna. What's on your mind?
Well, good evening, TBA. Good evening, Miss Mona, Black First. I just want to say how grateful I am that my husband found you guys. He's been listening for probably about a year, and I started listening about 3 months ago, and it has really solidified what I have believed and what I have seen since I moved to the United States about 15, 16 years ago. But I was calling because I wanted to speak in regards to what Mona said when she first came on tonight. And I wanted to add some more to it. I work in the staffing industry. I work at a temp agency here in Wilmington. And I also have a business that I have started, and I'm growing that business. As a black female in America, it is very difficult to get out there and meet people and network people and for people to take you very seriously. I can see with my husband, you know, when we go together out to networking events, business events in our community, how less receptive people are of him than they are of me, but at the same time, it's a huge hurdle for me to go out there and share our product. So I spend a lot of time networking. I network out the get-go because it is so important for us as black people to network within our community and be able to help each other out. You know, I have always been a huge go-giver. If you've ever read that book, it's called The Go-Giver by Bob Berg. In that book, it talks about how, you know, you work in reciprocity. You go out there and you ask the other person, how can I be of service to you? How can I help your business grow? What is it that you're looking for so that I can send you the right people? So we as a community, not only do we need to think about how we're going to open our brick-and-mortar store, you know, our storefront, and how we're going to present ourselves to the community, we also need to, you know, work on ourselves from within so that we can, you know, be the people that, you know, the clientele are looking for. Because,
let me ask you something. You work at a staffing agency. How many black businesses now? You're in Wilmington.
I am.
Okay. Former side of the Black Wall Street.
Yes.
Okay. For those of you who don't remember, everybody knows about Tulsa, but as we point out here on the Black Channel, for those of you who did not know, you all keep saying the Black Wall Street. You need to say the Black Wall Streets. There was more than one. There was Rosewood,
yes.
Wilmington, Tulsa, you know, Philadelphia. There were a number of them around the country, not just Greenwood, Archer, and Pine. So Wilmington was the one that was actually burned down. And when there was a white riot, a riot of white races, it was not a race riot, it was a riot of white races. But in Wilmington there, How many black businesses do you deal with? And how much of an issue of what I was talking about here tonight of being sloppy, unprofessional, unrealistic expectations or valuations of what they've got, how much of that do you encounter in staffing?
Well, to begin with, in regards to our clients, our, you know, the companies that come to us to look for people, none, absolutely none. No black-owned business comes to our company to look for employees. Now,
really?
Yes, really. And we are a very large company. We have offices here in – our corporate office is in, of all places, is called Whiteville, North Carolina. And we have offices – Yes, we are a national company.
Okay.
It's a small –
would your logo happen to be blue?
Yes.
Okay, then you and I both know who that company is.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure we both know who it is. It is a national company that works with if it's the one I'm thinking about, they work with the major 500s.
Yes.
Okay. No, they are one of the companies that the Labor Department uses to index employment.
Yes.
Okay, so now we both know what company you work for, and it's a very good reason why we cannot say the name, because I don't want you to get into trouble, but I do appreciate the inside information that you're giving us about this particular company, especially in Wilmington, but I know what you're talking about now.
Yeah, and it's really difficult. I my office is in a very high-traffic area in town. And I do have a lot of, you know, my brothers and sisters who come in looking for work. And what really bothers me, and I just can't wrap my mind around it, is just the mentality. And, you know, I just want a job. Okay, great. I will give you a job. So I send them. You know, I process them, make sure that their background is clean. I mean, the drug test is ridiculous. So I process these people. I make sure that they are, you know, they look presentable. They look good to go to work. They show up to work. So they go to their job. They show up to work, and they don't work. So I get a call, and there's like, they're not going to work out. Send me someone else. Now, it is, I cannot wrap my mind around the mind frame. I just do not. I cannot understand what it is about, you know, your family needs, you know, you need to feed your family. You need to keep a roof over your head. And you have to pay child support because you have to pay child support for the other children that you have. And it is very frustrating doing my job to help our community. And in the last 6-7 months, I have made a really big push to help, you know, the blacks in the community to get work. And it is amazing how many times I get phone calls from our clients and they prefer not to hire blacks. It is astounding. And every time I sit down with my immediate supervisor, and we have this conversation probably once a month. He says, what can I do? And he says to me, there is just nothing you can do. He says, if we had 500 of your husbands here in this office, in this company, we would be so much further ahead. We would be, you, he just, I really don't know, I don't know what we can do. But as a community here in Wilmington, you know, business owners, black business owners are really, you know, working with the community, working with the youth, because so the crime is ridiculous. For such a small community, our crime rate is very high. I live in a really nice neighborhood, and we've had almost all of our condos, we have to put security systems. And the thing, the demographic in this area is just, I don't understand. I really don't understand the mentality and, you know, the hard work that we as a community put in, you know, and then it just feels like all of our combined efforts are not, it just doesn't feel like it's coming together, it's working together. And, you know, as much as we do work together, there are still people who don't want to work together, who feel that is what yours is yours and what's mine is mine. And there is just nothing that can be done to, you know, to make things better for everybody. So,
Do you think they understand how dire and the situation currently is for you? Do you think that they actually realize how grave the situation is? Because Wilmington is not a rich place.
No, it's not. The situation is, I mean, we used to live downtown in the north side of Wilmington, which is near where the riots actually happened. And that side of town, the violence is really bad. We actually, there was a shooting behind our house, and we had to move from there several years ago. We practically packed everything, and we left within 48 hours. That is how afraid of our own, you know, safety we were, you know, being that as a black family, you know, we were afraid to be even in our own community, in our own neighborhood. Things have changed a little bit, but it's still bad. It is very bad out here. But as a community, I feel that we are working on making it better, but I just don't feel that our combined effort is good enough. I feel that instead of all of us working together congruently to achieve, you know, a certain goal, I feel like all of these different organizations are doing their part without consulting with each other, without coming together as a community, as a strong force together.
It's disorganized and sloppy. Everybody's just going in their own direction. And we already have people of low resources to begin with, and they're not even pooling their resources. So it just ends up being this very sloppy, disorganized, discombobulated, I dare, but it ends up being sloppy and discombobulated, and they don't understand that. Now, as far as you said that the businesses are trying to give jobs to the youth, or the black businesses are, and then you said, but the crime rate is ridiculous. So that makes it sound like that's trying to give jobs contributing. Was that what you meant, or did that just come out wrong?
No. It's just two different things.
Well, what the black businesses that you do have there, how much of an impact are they actually able to make? How organized are they as far as even being business owners? Forget social activism, as far as being business owners, period. How organized are they?
Not organized at all. Not at all. I mean, just to give you an example, a very, very simple example, two examples. I was looking for, I had a very, very horrible experience probably a month ago getting a pedicure for my mother, myself, and two of my friends. My mother and I are black. We're from Brazil. My friend is from Mexico, and her grandmother is from Colombia. So all the four of us go to the salon, of course, Vietnamese-owned, because we could not find anywhere else to go. So we just walked into a salon. We had absolutely the worst experience ever. So I made a vow. I said, I refuse to go to another nail salon that is not black-owned. So I set out to look for a black-owned nail salon. I have yet to find one. Same thing with the hair salon. I'm having an issue with my hair falling. And actually, Mona and I spoke on Facebook a month ago. Great information. Thank you so much, Mona, for it. It has helped a lot. But I do need to get a haircut. I was traveling about an hour and a half to get my hair done by a family member, though she has been on the road quite a bit, and I haven't been able to see her. I need a haircut. So I go to look for a black-owned hair salon. There's probably two or three that are semi-good, and the one that is really good, she is never there. Her hours are posted 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Walk-ins are available to come. Saturday morning, 2 weeks ago, my mother and I get up. We go to get our hair done. 8 a.m., knock on the door, no one's there. We sat in the car, waited for 30 minutes. I decided to give her a call on the phone. She didn't call me back until almost 1 p.m. in the afternoon. Oh, I wasn't there. That is what hurts these business owners, is that they're not there when they say they're going to be there. And it goes back to the same thing that Mona has said. You know, if you're going to set up a business, you need to be there 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. hours. This is when you receive your clients. You need to be there at least an hour before, and you stay an hour after so you make sure that everything is in order so you can, you know, receive your clientele. If you cannot be there in those hours, or you cannot have a responsible party to be there to help you run your business, you shouldn't even bother having it, because your reputation as a good, you know, hairstylist is there. But when it comes to your work ethics, that shows a lot about you.
That is one of the things that I've encountered as a problem when people mm-hmm. ask me for advice about running a business or whatnot, and I say this thing to them, is that you may be good at what you do, but you're getting your ass kicked at everything that doesn't involve cooking, doing hair, doing car repair. You may be a good car mechanic, but you're getting your ass kicked at everything else that doesn't involve working on these cars, and you're losing customers to a lesser mechanic, a lesser cook, a lesser hairdresser. You're losing customers to a lesser seamstress because you can't show up on time. You can't answer a phone. You can't deal with customers' questions. You can't answer. They're out here waiting to give you their money, and you can't be bothered to show up to get their money. You can't be bothered to show up. At that point right there, it becomes you shouldn't be in business, because all you did was have a grand opening so you can have a grand closing.
Yeah, and you become irrelevant. You become absolutely irrelevant, and
we sit here. So many black businesses open up expecting that their customer, with the idea that their customers will never have a better alternative. They are dependent upon the expectation, my customers will never have a better alternative, and that's not a business strategy.
Mm-hmm. Correct. It is not. In the book, The Outliers, by Malcolm Gladwell, it says, it takes you 10,000 hours for you to become great at what you do, or for a business to run, or for anything. That is 5 years of 40 hours of work every week. So in 5 years, a business either makes it or breaks it, and the reason is because of you. You have to, you know, become mentally strong, physically strong, and be able, and, you know, you need to learn how to run that business. And you know that if you do not put in those 10,000 hours, you are not going to become successful. It's either you're going to succeed or you're not going to succeed. And the line is so fine that people don't even notice that it's there. And so that that is what really, really bothers me. And, you know, I strive and work hard on it every day to make sure that when I have a client, I focus on that client 100% and make sure that I deliver, follow through, and get the job done. Because, you know, as a black female Brazilian American Belizean who speaks three different languages and can pretty much, you know, you put me in a situation, I will figure it out. I will figure out how to get it done. You know, I am fighting a battle on a daily basis with the Latino community, with the black community, and the white community on a daily basis. Is because, oh, you're too black for you to be Latino, for you to be speaking Spanish or Portuguese. And then, on the other hand, I'm black, but why do you speak all these different languages? Why are you able to speak very well and clearly? Why are you able to articulate? And I get that all the time from, you know, mainly black females in my community. And then, you know, white community just, they can't figure out, you know, they can't figure me out. You know, why is it that I was able to become the person that I am becoming today? And it's all, you know, within the books that I read, the people that I speak with, and the things that I do. You know, I observe a lot. I've been listening to you guys for a very long time now, and everything that you say is 100% true. Everything. And if I didn't believe in it, I would not be calling right now. I would not be like, oh, it's 8 p.m. Let's get on your stream right now. And if it's not working on the iPad, we make sure we get on the phone. Or we pull another or the computer. Anything. We are listening. We're soaking in the knowledge. Everything stops. When you're on, that's what we focus on. My husband, we have a library and boxes of books because we cannot even figure out where we're going to put. We're learning, you know. He's studying, he's self-studying right now to become, to be a filmmaker. And of all places here, Wilmington is a right best place for him to do it. So I'm working with him on writing scripts, on doing things that we can to bring our message out there. You know, we have a lot of very good projects that we're working on together that you'll be amazed when they come out. Excuse me. So we are definitely getting our ducks in a row. Excuse me.
Yeah, I think she's been abducted. I'll just leave her on the line and see if she comes back here. While we're waiting on that, let me grab a couple more callers here. Is this Afro for Black?
Yes, it is. Black First.
Black First, brother. Welcome back to the Black Channel here. What's on your mind, brother?
A couple of things real quick. I want to thank everybody and thank you for giving the good information you're giving today. A couple of things. I don't know if Simone's listening, but one thing that kicked off to me in her great expose and information that she gave us today was she talked about her website name. When I heard it, I don't remember off the top of my head what it was, but it piqued me. I said, why would you use a website name like that? That's not going to get you exposure. So I did a little digging. So if she's listening, and I hope somebody listening that can get to her, or she's listening, I want her to know that I did a little research while I was sitting online, just for fun, because I'm playing with some SEO-type stuff now. There is a name I just lost that information that quick, but I'm going to look it up real quick here. But I was surprised that when I heard her name, I said, now, why would somebody come on that name to look for her to buy a house in Atlanta, other than if she actually had a business card, they knew her, she was referred. She's not that name wouldn't leverage the power of the internet for someone who's out of state who's looking to relocate to Atlanta. Atlanta's a pretty popular place for people to relocate to. So I did a little research online. I said, okay, let me see what names are available or not available. Right now, AtlantaHomesForSale.com is available. That's what I wanted to tell her. If she could take a hold of that, get somebody to do a web design from one of us to do web design. I don't really do that. I do SEO stuff, but web design is a little bit beyond me. I just understand basic WordPress stuff. I don't understand enough to make it look right. But if she was to take that name, AtlantaHomesForSale.com, and buy the name, and I think right now GoDaddy's giving names for a buck right now. Buy the name. The hosting costs you a buck a month right now on a package, so you're paying $2 a month. You can leverage the power of the internet. Anyone that searches for Homes for Sale Atlanta, you'd be in the first three just by default.
Okay.
Now, could you imagine how much potential that is for more clients?
Well, definitely, I'm sure she's still listening out there, so that'd be good information for her to have. This is one of the advantages of having a computer specialist on the Black Channel with us.
My second thought is the next caller that called was talking about networking and getting out there and meeting with people and socializing with people. I do find that that's important. I do find that that's very credible. And the way I learned how to network was kind of weird. I actually learned from someone who did something you mentioned, TBA. It was a guy named Joe Martin, although he doesn't do it anymore because he has his own company that deals with motivational speaking and that for teachers. But back when I started university, he used to have a program back a long time ago that what he would do, he'd go to schools, and when he'd go to the schools, he would sit down and he would present, okay, if you want to get good grades in school, what you want to do is you want to first look at schools in the way I did. He came out of projects in Miami down in Liberty City area. So his methodology was based on teachers are people, deal with the person, not with the percentage. The percentage is just a reflection of the person in a relationship. And he taught us basic elements of how to network within the academic structure back when I was in college starting out. And I said, okay, he gave all that for free. He gave it out on top for free. And he said, okay, well, I got a book here. If you want it, come buy it. As a Black man speaking to a crowd that was 80% white, he sold out in 10 minutes. He literally just went in there with his book, sat down, gave his appreciation. I got more in the book. This is what I need off the top of my head. Take it and run with it if you can't get the book. Everybody, including me, ran to that table to get books like it was going out of style. And he wrote a second book about networking, and that taught me how to network because he said networking is basically this. You go to somebody, you tell them, you ask them, okay, what you do, you let them tell you what they do, you grab their business card or whatever, you write on the back what they do, you put in your Rolodex or put in your phone or whatever, you put a note what they do, and then that way you can reference the information later, and it's in your service that you grow as an individual because now you have other people coming to you and they know they're getting relevant information. So what happens is not only do you meet more people along the way, you run into people who are targeted right in that bullseye market that you're trying to penetrate. You meet people and say, okay, oh, yeah, I need my computer fixed. But also, yeah, you know, do you deal in music at all or anything like that? Yeah, I know a guy. I actually did some tracks, something like that. Yeah, I need background music for something I'm working on, too, once I get my computer fixed. You'd be able to start penetrating and start over-delivering and under-promising, and that brings your business and your marketplace and your share in the focus because now you have those people who are targeted to you and trust you, and you build a relationship with them because you serve them first. Like the lady was saying before, you serve first, and then you're served. You're in a – now, what I've been doing the last week for those who have been watching the Intelligent Black Society page, every question I can answer about business, I've been putting my two cents in, and I've probably been dropping probably pages, maybe books of information in each post intentionally because I really value this group, and what I want to do is I like to see people succeed. And I've made very little mention of anything about what I'm doing outside of what I talked about a couple weeks ago on the broadcast. I made very little mention about what I'm doing because it's not about what I'm doing right now. It's about you guys have questions. I may have relevant information. I want to give it out.
And that is exactly what we made this for. I made the Intelligent Black Society group because there is no place either on Facebook or the internet, period, where you as a regular person can walk into a room and ask questions of other people who can actually help you get answers. Very, very rare that you can sit down with them like that and actually talk about that. I've had folk out, and it's not just about the things that you and I mentioned here today. It's about basic, like, for networking. If networking is easier than ever, and most black people are failing at it. Most black people are failing at it because, for example, I've got plenty of black folk who want to sell something. They spent zero amount of time building up a social network of any kind. And then just want to get up one day with their hand out asking for money from every person they see on Facebook. You're supposed to be cultivating that customer base for the last 6 months. You're supposed to be getting to meet as many people as you could. You've got all these platforms out here, and as I pointed out last week, marketing firms call YouTube social networking. They don't call YouTube a video site, everybody. Marketing firms refer to YouTube in the same sentence that they refer to Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest. And Tumblr, by the way. They refer to all those platforms as social networking, all of them. And it's about building synergy. But most black folk don't know that. Let me give you an example here. Simone wants to sell homes. Simone has a website. Simone's part of Intelligent Black Society. That's a good place to start. But what Simone could do very easily, and I'm just throwing this out there, Simone could go and buy a $100 digital camera. Don't have to get a DSLR. You can get a $100 digital camera, you know, a 16 megapixel, one that fits right in your purse. Very easy. You know, a Panasonic FH5 or a Samsung DV300X or something like that. You can get one of those, you know. She can go to a house that she's trying to sell. She can walk in and just do a panoramic shot in each room of the house. Import it into Movie Maker or whatever. Edit it to edit out herself walking from room to room. And post that up as a YouTube video and have it on her website. So now we can, now that we got a video, we can utilize that across Facebook, Twitter. You can take that video, and now you have a reason for being on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube simultaneously. You got a reason for being on all three. See, that
now, let me say this
about giving yourself a reason for being there. Now you can leverage all those things. Go ahead, brother.
Real quick, and I apologize for interrupting. That was very rude of me. Just real quick to give people an idea of what you're going up against. Now you posted in the page something about generation like. I found a copy that I showed it to people at my studio, one that I'm working on, and we need to leverage Facebook more effectively and more calculated approach to using Facebook as a networking and outreach mechanism. Now, given that, I looked at that and I said, you know what? I'm working on this project myself, and I want to give you guys an idea of what you're dealing with here. Now, my Facebook isn't – I don't have the most connections. I got to work on that. That's one avenue I have to work on. But I do keep on LinkedIn, and I looked at my LinkedIn connections right now because of my experience, my resume, and the people I've networked with, and I contribute to forums on there. Now, I'm sitting right now, as we speak right now, my first-level connections are 15,057. Second, professionals in my network is 26.7 million. So anything I'm doing right now, as far as any of my projects going for teaching or anything, is going to go in that direction. Because if I put a post out there right now and put it for all the forums, everybody I know, I just hit 15,000 people in one shot. So let's say I materialize on 10% of that. That means that 1,500 people just liked it.
But as black people, we'll spend a whole lot of time figuring out how to leverage those types of numbers. And that is why we end up trying to run on somebody's radio broadcast and blurt out our address. You know why? That tells me that you're sloppy, that you haven't done the due diligence of building your business, and that's why you're doing something as sloppy and as amateurish and totally, totally tacky as trying to run off on somebody's show and blurt out your web address. You're having to blurt out web addresses because you haven't built the time to build relationships. And I'm not interested in trying to do business with somebody who cannot be bothered to actually run their business. I can't have it. And by the way, now, in the chat room, Liberian Son, you're wrong. That's not guerrilla marketing. It's not. That's just marketing. That's social networking. There's nothing undercover about that. What I do on Facebook and YouTube, there's nothing undercover about that. I am boosting intelligent black society. And even though we don't have the gigantic numbers, my numbers are more potent than pretty much most people out there, and we just proved that. And the reason for that is because I know what my numbers do, because I've researched my numbers. And what I want is for the rest of you to be able to do what I did. I'm the only person on earth who's got a social network and done what I did with crowdfunding who says, I want to tell everybody else how to do what I did. But we don't take out the time to lay the groundwork. We don't ever do that. We don't take out the time to learn and to build relations online, period, much less for our business. And everything is just sloppy and tacky. And then they get mad at me because what I do is not sloppy and tacky, and I won't tolerate sloppy and tacky. If you're going to run a business, run the damn thing. But don't play about it. And don't come here thinking I'm going to play about it. You might be mistaken. I promise you I won't be. I want people who come to me with stuff that will succeed, not somebody who's trying to guess their way through it. Now, I'll tell you all something. Go back and replay this broadcast. When Simone was talking, how much talking did I do? And I'm the authority. And when she was talking, how much talking did I do? That's how you react when you're in the presence of people who know what they're doing. I respect people who know what they're doing, even if it's information that I already have. The rest of you don't have it. But I know that she's saying what I would tell you. There's nothing for me to say. And where you're dealing with computers and stuff like that. And I want our other two computer people to be more high profile too, as a matter of fact. Because we need more people who do what you do. And somebody like you who's been generous enough that you're helping to try to get people smartened up in that regard, I hope they take advantage of that. You know, I hope you can finish up your videos and your presentations so that people can see that kind of thing. But all I'm interested in right now, brother, is actionable information. I want people who have information that we can act on. That's what I'm looking for. Everything else, I don't need it. A lot of good social causes out there, a lot of people doing a lot of things. I want people who are going to show us how to transform your ideas into revenue. Not an article that, hey, I read this article that talks about. I want to know what you know, people. Intelligent black society is about telling us what you know. Not what you read. I want to know what you know. And what I'm finding out is there's a bunch of folk who are in there who may not know as much as they need to know. I'm not going to criticize that. What I'm going to say is, okay, you got something you can learn. Let's get gamed up. Let's everybody get smartened up. I'm trying to turn everybody into wise guys. That's what I'm trying to do. It's not going to work if everybody isn't open to being told. It's clear you don't know. So why doesn't everybody just sit back and start getting some gain from it? But at the same time, those of you who do know, I'm going to start insisting that y'all start laying down game. That's what I do here at the Black Channel going on 5 years. That's what I'm talking about. This has been a very productive broadcast tonight because we did what most other people cannot do. We went in depth with actionable information and said, here's how you do it. Now, you may not want to get your money right or want to get your credit right, but you can't say that you weren't given the information. You were given it. Now what you going to do?
Now, I want to ask a question. My question is this. Thinking through what we just had discussion, now, I did do the slides for the VMware stuff, and a few brothers here pinged me on that, and I gave it to them, and there's been a good response on that, and I hope it helps them to step the money up so they can do what they want to do outside of the 9-to-5 so they can build that business up. That was the intention. My question is, I'm wondering to myself as I sit on this phone, do I need to do another slide presentation about networking? Do I need to teach that?
I mean, look, I'm ready to do that because I want to go in-depth with this. And after 7 a.m. is finished being edited and everything, I want to go step-by-step with that. But by all means, do that because there was somebody who was posting up about Facebook and some website that talked about Facebook marketing, but all it did was just explain what a like page was. It did not explain how you use a like page as a proper marketing tool. It didn't do that. Most black people do not know how you use your like page as a proper marketing tool. First of all, you use your like page because Facebook will give it priority when you pay money. And the rate is really low. Second of all, your like page is on Facebook and YouTube. It is damn thing on. On Facebook and YouTube will both give you analytics right down to the state. The people who watch your videos on YouTube, you can see where they live right down to the state they live in. So if you're trying to determine how do you market something to people, the analytics will tell you where your viewers are. Where you're, the people who like your stuff, it tells you exactly where they are, right down to the state. Now you can start doing some smart marketing. Because you use these free plugs, you get information. No, they don't game you up like this anywhere else. But guess what? You can't do no analytics if you don't get an audience. And you can't get an audience if you're not making videos and if you're not making content and posts that people want to respond to. Right there. I just taught you all how to social network and market. Right there. And Twitter has a similar business solution as well. Now, I need to go more in-depth with how to analyze the analytics, but let me tell you right there, what I just gave you will help those of you who are listening right now make more money than you've been making, and I didn't even charge you for that, by the way. Hell, they owe me money now, Afro. They owe me money now for what I just told them, because game is supposed to be sold, not told, and I just gave you that one for free, for absolutely nothing, just for listening to the Black Channel. I just told you all how to start your own internet marketing and how to use these social platforms and why Zuckerberg is a billionaire and why he puts so much emphasis on getting information on all of y'all. Because this is what businesses pay for to Facebook. So that they can use those platforms to start doing smart marketing. And a smaller operation is even more potent for you. Going to bring another caller in here if I can. Let me get caller from 832. You're online with Black Channel.
Hey, this is Brandon from Georgia. I was
What's
calling
on your
about
mind?
Yeah, I was calling about the fact that how long do you think it's going to take for like black empowerment to actually make a difference? As far as like something that we can actually see and it's actually
Don't
making a change.
Don't think we can see it
city.
Now?
No, we can see it now, but I mean as far as because when people talk about black empowerment, they say that it's going to be like a protective shield sort of and just basically being able to actually have all these businesses get started.
Well, what I'm doing right now is I'm amassing all the people who actually know what they're doing right now. But what you're talking about is, well, what do we do to get black people out the hole we're in? Understand something. There's going to be a segment that's just going to have to be written off. We can't worry about them. We have to concentrate on the people who are getting something done. We can't worry about the rest of those folks.
Okay.
So what I want you to do is stay focused like a laser beam where we are right now. Focus on what we're building up. Floyd Mayweather Jr. does not worry about who number 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 are. Floyd Mayweather Jr. worries about Floyd Mayweather Jr. and how long he's holding that belt now. He's on his way. He is on his way the way he's going to replacing Ali. Can I just say it like it is? Hey, it is what it is. Real talk. He's on his way. It can realistically happen. He's on his way to replacing them in relevance. Why? Because Floyd Mayweather Jr. worries about him. Michael Jordan did not worry about who the highest paid player in the NBA was. Do you know how many years Jordan was in the NBA and he was not the highest paid player? He was worried about being the highest paid player. He's trying to get this damn $100 million out of Nike. That's what he's trying to do. And he knows that that's only going to happen as long as he puts up. He doesn't have to be the highest paid player, but he would be the highest paid basketball player because he's going to be the highest paid businessman in basketball.
Yeah, I was just like, I feel like a lot of people are waiting on acquiring enough money to start a business or something like that rather than, you know, getting started right away. And by the time they do have enough, it's going to be, you know, 2 or 3, 4 or 5 years from now. Because I was talking to people on the Intelligent Black Society and people didn't really have any real ways to make money other than, I mean, to start their business other than getting a loan or saving from their job.
But there's only three ways you're going to – look, startup capital only comes from three sources. You either save it, get a loan, or get other people to invest, family or friends or whatever. That's the only three places you can get capital, those three. There is no fourth option or whatever. Those are your four places. Those are your places. Pick one. It's the hard truth, brother. You're going to do it one of those three ways. That's it. Unless you're some type of investment broker, but even still, you need startup capital, which means you have to save up your own money to get started. So you're going to use one of those three things.
I was thinking about as far as, like, starting a smaller venture that doesn't cost as much to be able to afford a larger venture or something like that.
Stepping stones only work if you master each step along the way. Just keep that in mind.
Okay. I know I just had like an idea of how to kind of like do that for like that everybody can kind of do. I was thinking as far as like buying things that are like wholesale or liquidations as a team together and then like shipping it off to a fulfillment house like Amazon. Fulfillment or something like that so that
yeah,
they do the handle the shipping for you.
Everybody's saying something like that. Here's the problem, brother. The problem where black men in particular fail is that we keep trying to figure out how we can make money without spending money and how we can build a business without knowing anything about our business. I want you all to take this term I give you tonight, tattoo it on your brains. Proof of concept. If you can't show me where you have made this with yourself, just stop. Everybody out there has got a plan. Everybody out there has got a plot. Everybody out there has got something that they want to do. And it's time for people to actually have a proof of concept. If you all are not going to show us where you've actually done what you're doing, it's not going to work anymore, man. That's why I started Intelligent Black Society. I started Intelligent Black Society because you all need to tattoo the words proof of concept on your brains and keep it there. Stop trying to get other people to join you in experiments. Show us where you have made work, and then we will bring more capital to it with you. But if you can't sell 3 items, what makes you think you're going to sell 300? And why should I put my money with somebody? He ain't sold 3 items. What makes me think he can sell 300?
That makes sense.
Yeah, we see your tone of voice drop there, though, because you're like, oh, it takes money. Brother, it's time for us to stop dealing with window shoppers. Either y'all are going to come to the table to do business or not. That's why I don't want people posting up a bunch of thoughts and a bunch of articles in Intelligent Black Society. People, bring us what you know. Bring us what you've done so that we have real information that we can act on. I don't just want knowledge anymore, people. I want intel. And I'm that in the military sense. I want intelligence. I want intel. I want people who can give us information that we can act on. I want positive intel. And you all aren't used to somebody who's black having a standard this high. Welcome to the Black Channel. Our standard is, this is what the standards were for me in corporate America. And the same for Afro on the Line. He's worked for large corporations also. This is the standard that we had to work by. And black folk recoil when we bring that standard to them. We understand this is new to y'all, but this is the only way it's going to work. Afro, am I lying here?
You are telling the truth. The rule of thought is, if you can't do better than the person that was before you, you will be replaced. And the other rule of thought was, if you want to be promoted or you want to get a raise, how do you bring in 10 times that much revenue yourself back to the organization? That time, you know, if you even got a shot.
All right, I guess it sums it up for me then. I was just throwing something out there, but I get what you're saying as far as the proof of concept.
I don't have a problem with you throwing it out there, brother, but what I'm saying is that if you want to, you threw it out there. Now, this is our feedback to you. There's nothing wrong with what you said. You threw it out there. Here's our feedback. You want it to work, bring a proof of concept, and it'll start working. 7 a.m. got the crowdfunding that it did. Why? Because I brought you all a proof of concept. You saw Dr. Anderson. You saw Brett Peebles. Saw Umar Johnson. You saw Dr. Anderson. You saw Brett Pulley. You saw Umar Johnson. And you saw Don Peebles. I brought you a proof of concept of a documentary. At that point, it no longer was an experiment. It was just investment. You all saw me do it. I'm saying I laid the game down for you. Pick it up and run with it. Maybe yours isn't a documentary. Maybe it's iPads. Maybe it's shoes. Maybe it's hairstyles. Maybe it's whatever. I laid the game down for you. The technique I use will work for any of you. Those are the standards that I had in corporate America. That was what was expected of me. That's what I had to do as a business owner. And I simply brought this to you all so you can see how it's done step by step, proof of concept. And I explained to you how to crowdfund before I actually did it myself. Remember that? I explained to you why Reek's crowdfunding and the frauds worked before I actually went and did it myself. So if I didn't understand it, how did I explain it before I actually went out and did it? I understand this as theory, and I understand it as concept, and I understand it as execution. So if I'm telling you that this is how you do it, I like to think it's pretty reliable because I called before I did it, and then I did it, and now I'm calling what I did to make it work. You all don't have anybody else anywhere you can talk to who you can call up on a phone and say, how did you do this? And they will just give you straight answers. Ain't no shortcuts to greatness, brother. Ain't no shortcuts.
Mm-hmm.
You either get it or you don't. You're either going to do the training or you're not.
Okay, well, all right. I got it. Proof of concept. Black first.
Black first, brother. Thank you very much for joining us here tonight. Afro, if you got any other people who do what you do, brother, please, by all means, let them know that we're out there. I'd love to add them to the group.
I'm working on it, but I'm in a unique position where I wasn't supposed to get this high up the IT tree, but I sniffed a little here, a little there. I saw a couple things, and I ran with them as soon as I could as a result, and I'm still running now. I mean, I'm doing the videos here, and I'm coaching, counseling there, but I'm looking at the next thing I want to study and certify for right here on the floor. I put out the notes yesterday, and I got to start working on that. So I'm still a work in progress. I'm just a proof of concept that's still proven.
Like I say, for the things that you have mastered, that'll help a lot of people. And if you have other folk, you know, in computer programming, IT and whatnot, bring them to us, brother. That we need all the input from people who actually know. We need all the people who can execute that we can find. Definitely bring them. We want to have them as part of this because intelligent black society is about people who know or people who are trying to find out. That's what it's all about. Not theory, not social events, you know, not I'm interested in this flea of fancy or whatnot. I don't want followers. I want leaders. I don't want watchers. I want workers. That's what I'm looking for. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Black first, best fast words.
Thank you very much for joining us here tonight, brother. I don't know if Anna has disappeared on us.
I am here. I am back.
Okay, you are here. Well, definitely, we're getting ready to wrap it up here, but I definitely want to get back with you here, and I'll let you have the last word.
I just want to say thank you for having this channel available to us, and hopefully it will help us to, you know, work together better and get together better. Here locally, as a local community, you know, we know what happened here in 1898. I know of whites in the community that their family members passed down the big hush-hush secret of what happened here. And books have been written and things, different events have occurred here, where people are still, they still call it the hush-hush thing that happened in Wilmington. Oh, it was just a thing. No, it wasn't. Wilmington was one of the largest successful black community in America. And then the riots happened because the whites refused to accept blacks becoming successful. And I don't believe that Wilmington has really recovered since then. And I feel that, you know, I really love this community and I want to continue working and living here. And hopefully, I do have hope for the community, but we are going to have to move mountains here in order to change things around. So, again, thank you for having this channel, this avenue for us, and Black First.
Black First, sister, thank you very much for joining us here tonight. Mona Lachey, what have you thought of what you heard tonight?
A great array of information, and I just want to close out by saying there are no shortcuts to success. If you are not trying to invest in knowledge and resources, your business was going to come up short, Black First.
Brothers and sisters from around the world, we want people who understand and act on their understanding. The standard is set high in this place. It is not my goal to humiliate you, but I'm also not going to coddle you. It is my goal to train you. It is my goal to get you up to the standard. And this is the standard. Now, I've had some people who said, I contributed to 7 a.m. as if that was going to change the way in which I approach you. Brothers and sisters, it's not. You cannot power play with me over 7 a.m. That's not going to happen. And furthermore, it shows how infantile you are. I don't want people like that at the Black Channel. I want people who are here to learn and earn. That's what I'm looking for. Now, if that's what you're about, let's get it. If you're wrong about something, let's get you corrected so you can be correct. Not you getting your feelings on your shoulders. I don't want to be wrong. If you want to be wrong, get right. I don't want you to tell me I'm wrong. I can't roll with who wants a leader who never wants to be told that they're wrong, especially when they clearly are. That's what this place is about. And that's what I hope you're going to be about. For those of you who listen for the first time tonight, this is what we do at the Black Channel. This is Intelligent Black Society. We lay it down like nobody else does. This is not entertainment, it's enlightenment. We don't do relationships, we do revenue. And that's why we say this is not a show, it is a broadcast, it is a program. And it's the best damn one out there, as you've heard tonight. Now that you've been ganged up, get out there and get it. And this concludes tonight's broadcast of the BlackChannel.net radio. I am your host, your brother, your humble servant, the Black Authority, joined by Mona Lachey and Professor Black Truth. And until next time, which will be tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Central, same Black time, same Black channel, remember that Black is the future and the future is uncompromising.